folks. Welcome to another episode of Not Another Film Podcast. This is the podcast where we take movies we used to love as kids and we re-examine them in the harsh and sobering light of 2021. And there is no light more harsh or more sober than the light that reflects off of the terrifying, beady eyes of Ewoks as they traipse across Endor for our movie today.
I don't care for it. It
goes right through you.
My name is Ian Gears. I'm one of your co-hosts. I'm also joined by Lauren Thompson. How are you?
Tiati.
And we're joined by the person who chose this movie, Not Another Film Podcast All-Star. You know him from Godzilla. You know him from Dragonheart. So,
Dragonheart.
I know. Remember Dragonheart?
Oh, I loved Dragonheart.
So if it's got weird and wild creatures in it, it is Jay Donnelly.
Creepy critters.
Man, I don't think I've ever had a better introduction from Godzilla from Dragonheart. This is a peak. This is it.
And the next time you're on, we will say, from the Ewok Adventure.
Yeah, when you're on to do the battle for Endor.
Ooh. Oh, man, that'll be a trip.
This is the second Star Wars movie we've done on this podcast. Only the second. We've only ever done Phantom Menace. That's the only other one we did.
I blocked that one out.
Yeah, that was a 2.5 hour fucking saga.
And I would like to say again, fuck Qui-Gon Jinn for letting the slavery industry continue.
A lot of questions. A lot of questions.
A lot of logistics.
How is he the good guy?
Don't at us, Eric. So we're talking as it's known on Disney Plus, folks. By the way, you can watch this on Disney Plus. They let kids watch this. On Disney Plus, it is called Star Wars Vintage : The Ewok Adventure : Caravan of Courage.
Caravan of Courage.
This came out in 1985. '84. This was 84.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. So we're coming off of the, honestly, just the massive popularity of these murderous teddy bears after the Return of the Jedi.
It was like a year later, right? It was 83 for Jedi?
Yeah. Jedi was 83. So, you know, they said, well, we got to do this movie.
They were all in.
But, Jay, give us the introduction. Why this movie? Why now? You know, talk us through.
Why ever?
So I had gone back to my parents' house in Michigan, and I was helping my mom with an issue with the TV downstairs, which sits atop our old entertainment unit. And I just was down there anyway, and I was digging through it, and I found the VHS for the Ewok Adventure, which I accidentally stole as a child.
Ooh.
We had a Video Watch, which was a rental store like 3 blocks up the street. I had checked that movie out, and in the time that I had checked out, they folded, and then eventually came a Hollywood Video. And I just never brought it back, and they didn't log it, so I own it still.
Nah, that checks out.
I can't believe that they did not come knocking on your door for the Ewok Adventure.
People are clamoring for it. You need to return it and give it back to the people.
So was this like, were you a huge fan of this movie? Was this like a big deal for you as a kid? Where did it rank in Star Wars? Because I know you're a huge Star Wars fan, obviously.
Yeah, so it is, I mean, you know, Star Wars is my favorite franchise. And, you know, I consider myself probably the biggest Star Wars fan that I know. And like, I know, you know.
Again, Eric don't Anderson. At us.
I don't know, like, maybe you should fight.
I am aware of the caliber of fan you have on this show, and I respect that. But it's, you know, for me, it's the oldest, you know, film love memory that I have. There's the Star Wars trilogy and, like, Disney's Fantasia. Those would be, like, those would be four of my top five movies like that.
Both horrifying endeavors for children.
It explains a lot. And so there was just a day that I was at the video store, and you know, I was probably like 8 or 9. I was at the point where I could ride my bike there by myself and just look around, and I could bring something back. My parents gave me a little cash. It was fine. And I was like, wait, there's more Star Wars movies? What?
Ooh.
And so yeah, I rented the first one, and then I rented the second one, and then I went back later and rented the first one again, and then just kept it.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just, yeah, it was kind of a curiosity because it, And it's, again, like, as a kid, I don't think, you know, I was able to pick up on this, like, specifically. I couldn't articulate it. I was interested in the movie, and I liked it because it had the Ewoks in it, and there were some blasters and adventure. But it's not a great Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah,
like, when I think back to my childhood, you know, I probably watched the trilogy once a week. Over the 7 days, there was a day each week where I would watch, you know, the three at some point. And that did not happen with this movie. So when I was going through that cabinet and I found the VHS, I was like, oh, man, this has to happen. It's just rife. Because I, you know, my memories of it were so foggy. And it just seemed like the perfect thing for the podcast.
It's an amazing... I'm so glad you found it. Because I had been circling this one for a while. As I mentioned to you before when we were watching the movie, Lauren and I watched the holiday special in full for the first time during the pandemic, during Christmas. You know, when feelings are always high. And I hated that. With every fiber of my being.
I love bad movies.
And we both love Star Wars.
Who knows me knows that. I love a good bad movie. I love a bad movie. And I love Star Wars. And watching that Star Wars Christmas special was truly one of the most joyless experiences of my life. Most confounding experiences of my life.
You love Wookiees. You love porn. You don't like them together.
I was upset. I was confused, I was scared, and I was bored. It was a very odd combo.
But, that being said...
We also started at like 11 p.m. at night. So it was like a weird liminal space. Like the only lights on were like the lights from our Christmas tree. So it was just like a very weird headspace to be in. Yeah,
we were all scratchy or whatever the kid's name was. Itchy or whatever.
Oh, itchy? Yeah, itchy. Grandpa Lumpy.
Grandpa Lumpy. There we go. Oh, yeah, boy. You know, these canonical names. Chewbacca and Lumpy. And
yeah, at a certain point when I was watching the cooking show happen, I was just like, I've slipped into a fever dream. I'm not conscious anymore.
That shit was insanity. But we're talking Ewoks today.
Yes.
We're on Endor. We're not on Kashyyyk.
Yes.
So
yes,
we've got to really buckle down. I've been circling these for a while. I've been wanting to watch these for a bit. I'm really, really glad you gave us the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, but I do also think like us having watched the Christmas special was in a way good because what?
Holiday special.
Sorry.
It's a life day special.
The life day special.
It's very inclusive.
I think it was good because the bar was set incredibly low.
almost Ewok height.
So yeah, it was so low that just like this movie essentially could just trip over the bar. And I'd be like, good. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, like a Gorlax in his cage. Gorax?
Gorax.
Gorax,
excuse
Gorax.
Me.
Gorax.
Yeah, you can make Gorax with baking soda and a little but yeah, so the holy shit, man, this movie's wild.
I had no idea this movie existed.
Really?
No, I did not know. I think I knew about the Battle for Endor one, but I think in my head I always thought it was just like a half an hour thing, like TV special thing that was like very short.
So fun story.
So when I found out this was like two movies and they were each like film length, I was blown away.
Fun story about that, actually.
Yeah.
So a little bit of production history on this as I was reading. Let me just pull up the screenwriter's name very quickly.
You don't know this off the top of your head?
Unfortunately,
I don't. You're not good at your job.
So George Lucas,
take this seriously,
loved the Ewoks. They were one of the biggest things that he wanted to shop around after The Return of the Jedi. People responded, you know, not all positively to him when they came out, but he was already shopping around to do a special based on these little fuckers. And so he went to all of these TV studios and was like, we want to do a 30-minute holiday special with the Ewoks. And pretty much everybody was like, no, we don't want to do, especially because the last time he did a holiday special, it was,
horrible.
To quote the New York Times, an embarrassment.
That is a poisoned well to go back to.
Yes. Yeah. So they're like, we're not in the holiday special business with George Lucas. ABC, where this premiered, said, we're not interested in a 30-minute holiday special. We are, however, interested in a two-hour holiday special.
That's such strange logic. We are not... You have a bad history. We're not going to greenlight a half an hour. We will greenlight four times that amount of time.
Yep.
We are... Like, that, I don't understand the logic there, but sure.
Cocaine.
Yeah, the, it was the cocaine 80s.
Well, if there's more, they were all the Wolf of Wall Street.
So George Lucas, who had already come up with the story for this, you know, two kids crash land on Endor, they got to find their parents, he's being held captive by a giant Mark Rylance, then they're like, we got to figure this stuff out. Already had written a half an hour script, but when he finds out he has to expand it to a 2 hour script, he's busy. He's George fucking Lucas. He's busy.
Here it is.
He's planning these prequels. So
you can see it.
He hires the best writer that he can, a man named Bob Caro, who was his kid's babysitter.
Wait, what?
His children's caretaker.
Who happened to also be a screenwriter, right?
Who
happened to also be a screenwriter, right?
Who became a screenwriter?
Who was a screenwriter then, right?
I'm not seeing that line. In fact, the first credit on his IMDb is 1984's The Ewok Adventure.
Okay. So this just leads me to question: how old are George Lucas's kids, and can I watch them?
I'm sure you could.
I thought you were going to say you hired the best writer that he knew, himself.
No, because...
I feel like that is how you would think.
No, because Lucas...
At that time, you'd be like, it's me.
Lucas fluctuates, right? But I mean, we could have an entire podcast about just this, but it's like fluctuates between really knowing when to outsource work to better, more... Or maybe not better, but better. But to more capable writers
that.
Or directors... And then but then at the same time, we'll also just, like, never know when to leave well enough alone.
There's, like, yeah, I think any good director, if you're talking stage director, like, for TV, movies, showrunner, property manager, that kind of idea. The idea that, like, you're there to be the unifying focus of things, but you defer to people in their departments that are gonna be the specialists.
Yes.
And sometimes he knew when to do that, and sometimes not so much.
Yeah, but this guy, Bob Caro, first credit, Ewok Adventure, second credit... Ewoks, the television show.
What?
Yep.
It was a short, TV show?
Short-lived TV show, 14 episodes.
Animated live action?
Oh, was it
animated.
Yeah.
And has since only ever done, he does mainly children's animated television. So he did some episodes of Tiny Toons, did some episodes of Alvin and the Chipmunks. And most the last credit on his resume... is 2004's Tales from the Endor Woods, which was an hour-long animated movie.
Oh.
Which I assume is also about Wicket and Deej.
Oh, Deej.
Man, are there, like, Wicket stands out there?
Yeah, Warwick Davis.
Other than Warwick Davis. Like, do we have any people who are like, yeah, no, my favorite, unironically, my favorite Star Wars character is Wicket.
Oh, I'm sure.
I guarantee that exists.
Email me. I want to know why.
Is it
a sex thing? No. I have to know.
Well, like, they do talk about furries a fair amount
in
this film.
Yeah.
Like, is it a sex thing? Have you seen Paddington? Do you know that there's a better version of it done?
That is 13 minutes into the podcast before Lauren mentioned Paddington.
And that is, spoiler alert, two of the best films ever made. Yeah, no, I'm furious that I've recommended Paddington so much that I can't recommend it again for this movie. But no, listeners, that I would be talking about Paddington constantly if Ian wasn't here just forcing me to stop.
There's a Paddington embargo on Lauren right now. She's not allowed to talk
Before
about
Before this episode started, Ian said, you get 1 minute. So this is my 1 minute. Paddington, it's amazing.
All right, let's begin. We're in the Endor Woods. Some are on the moon of Endor, I guess. One of the moons of Endor.
Correct. There are 8 moons. This is the forest moon of the sanctuary moon.
Boom. There we go. Thank you. This is why we have you around.
Yes.
So do you want to begin just kind of like where this in the timeline of Star Wars? Because this was a big point of contention, and I loved your observation about this because we could not figure out when in the timeline of the OT. This took place.
Right. Yeah, as in pre or post Return of the Jedi.
So this is tricky for me because So for one, you know, all of my childhood and then most of my fandom was the pre-Disney canon. And then there's the post-Disney canon, which is, like, reimagining a lot of things. And
yeah.
So, you know, there's already that, like, kind of multiverse thing starting to happen there,
yeah,
which is tricky.
Yeah, the old EU versus, like, the new Disney cinematic universe.
Yeah. The hard thing about nailing this one down is that, you know, they talk about a Star Cruiser, there's a blaster, but outside of that, there's not a lot of Star Wars elements in this. So it's really hard to nail down aesthetically where they are. Wicket's there, so we know that it's sometime during his lifetime, which gives us a little bit to nail it down. But the hard thing is, throughout this movie, he learns English, or common in Star Wars. He picks up some words, and so it makes things tricky, because it's like, okay, in Jedi, when he runs into Leia, it really seems like he's never run into a human being before.
Yeah, it really does read in Return of the Jedi, like, that's first contact for them.
But also, if I met Carrie Fisher in the woods, I would also pretend like she was the first person I'd ever seen. So, like, maybe Wicket's just, like, playing a game.
I could see that he's very playful throughout this. Very
yeah.
Cute.
Yeah, but then they're also acting like these are the first humans they've ever seen.
Well, right, there's the rest of the village to consider as well.
And also, like, at a certain point, as you pointed out during this movie, in either this movie or Return of the Jedi, he's playing dumb and pretending that he doesn't know English.
Yeah.
He's messing with one of the two.
Yeah.
Timelines. He's either messing with these kids or he's messing with the Rebel Alliance.
I prefer him messing with these two dum-dums.
I think this is probably after...
So here's my...
But also, he seems so young in this one. He seems like a little baby Ewok.
He's a baby Ewok in Return of the Jedi, too. He's like a kid.
I know. I don't know.
Well, and that might just be his personality. Wicket might just be like the baby Huey of Ewoks.
Yeah.
he's actually 48. my theory on the matter is that this is the one big Star Wars movie that does not begin with a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
You're right.
So I think this movie takes place in the future. And it's a cyclical nature. And I'm going full Star Wars multiverse on this.
Oh.
This is a parallel universe.
This is a what if.
This is what if.
I love a what if. Okay.
This is a what if. This is a what if the first humans that Wicket and the Ewoks met were actually a shitty Edward Furlong impersonator and baby Lauren. What if that's what...
I was waiting for when you were going to say that little girl looked like baby me.
Yeah, a lot.
Ian, you've been to my childhood home. You've seen all of the pictures of me. There are so many baby pictures of me hung up in my home. Ian's pointed out, it looks like a shrine. It looks like I may have died.
It's like that scene in 21 Jump Street where Jonah Hill's like, Mom, why'd you put all these pictures up? It looks like I died.
But this little girl does look a lot like me when I was a kid.
I want to clarify this, though, about your house. It is incredibly sweet.
Yeah.
Nice. I don't have that many pictures of myself as a kid, and I wish I did. Like,
oh, yeah. No, I think it is so sweet. I love them. I also just, like, they're really cute pictures of me, so I'm always like, yeah, I was cute as shit when I was a kid.
Exactly.
That's a picture of me on a horse. Look at me. I'm adorable.
But speaking of things on horses, Ewoks love horses.
Yeah. No caravan of courage, that belongs.
Yeah, this... I will also say, like, this is one of the only, like, blonde female characters in the Star Wars universe. I feel like there's a lot of brunette ladies up in there, so I like the blonde rep. Even though this little girl kind of sucks, but...
She's, like, four. What do you expect her to do? She sits on a horse, and she's like, I'm tired. I'm going to sleep. I'm hungry. I'm going to eat. I don't feel good. I'm going to pass out. If anything, I feel like she's the one character that's a straight shooter in this.
That's right. She did also figure out, like, oh, you gotta use the magic stick to get my brother out of this cursed water.
Yeah, you know?
Right.
Dive into this shit. Okay,
it's all episodic anyway. It's literally just like they go on a road trip, and then they meet this person, and then they meet this person.
At any point, you could walk away for 40 minutes and come back and know exactly what's happening. And in that respect, Bob Caro, great screenplay.
You know what? for like a movie to make a sandwich to, yes.
Wow, that's a great way to judge movies. This is a movie to make a sandwich to. Oh yeah, so we also got to talk about the fact that this kid, so her name is Sindel, baby Lauren's name is Sindel. She has an older brother that is just kind of like, you really only have one type of boy in this in Star Wars.
Yeah.
And it is a lean forward aggro surfer kid.
Who is literally dressed in a Luke Skywalker cosplay.
Well, no, we were talking about this earlier. He's dressed as a resistance pilot.
For sure. Yeah. He's got the orange jumpsuit, the vest, with the kind of like white
vest. Yeah, and for a bit I was like, oh, is that just kind of in this universe what people wear when they're in like space flight? But then no one else in his family is dressed that way. And he definitely is not in the resistance because he's a baby. So I definitely think he's just one of those kids that's like, yeah, no, I'm a big fan. I'm wearing my outfit. Like, he's literally just doing an everyday, like a Disney cosplay.
I think it's like a kid who walks around in like a LeBron James jersey.
Yeah, it is like, I do think it is in this universe. It is the version of wearing a sports jersey.
Man, what a nerd.
This kid is a fucking nerd.
This kid also, so his name, folks, is Mace.
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 Not Mace Windu, obviously. Canonically.
Obviously.
I would love to see Sam Jackson in this role.
Yeah, oh my god, it would be amazing.
And yeah, so this again goes to just like George Lucas being George Lucas, of just kind of like, if you were to ask him, he had already, you know, in his head, written the entire lineage of Star Wars in 1977. But at this point, he's like, yeah, sure. Mace is a great name. Let's go with Mace. Let's use that. And then, like, when, like, people forgot about this movie, he's like, you know, I want to recycle that name and give it to Sam Jackson. And he did. And so now, canonically, the most common name for a boy in the Star Wars universe is Mace.
Mace is the Jeff of Star Wars.
That's awesome. Because that name fucking rocks.
Yep. Other name is their parents' names. I just love the name of their dad, Jeremit.
Yeah, man.
It's like continuing the tradition of like, sometimes you have characters named like Luke, and sometimes you have characters named Sindel. And like, so you have like the weird names, the normal names, and then you have the normal names with like two letters changed.
Right.
Like Jeremit.
Well, and this actor, the actor who played Jeremit, that's the guy who was the janitor in I'm Thinking of Ending Things. You can see it in the face.
Wait, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Whoa!
I looked him up on IMDb. That sad, sad janitor.
Oh,
that's my
damn
recommendation for the end of this movie.
Damn, good for him.
Yeah. So there's a starship crash, or a cruiser crash. This kid fucking, like, the way that this kid explains it is he's like, yeah, I stole my parents' cruiser and we crashed on this fucking planet. I don't know what you want me to say here. I shouldn't be driving. I'm 12. Like, Jay, how would you describe the opening situation here?
I mean, they drop you right in. Like, yeah, there's a crash. The parents are looking for the kids. We don't know why they have to be looking for the kids at night. Like, their whole conversation is, we told them to be here. But then later, the Ewoks find them inside the cruiser.
Yeah, they go and they're like, they weren't supposed to leave the cruiser. So they go out and look for them. But later, the Ewoks come in and they are in the cruiser. So they never left.
Well, one of them's in the cruiser. Sindel's in the cruiser. And Mace has, like, gone hunting for whatever is going on.
But Mace went out because he said their parents never came back to the cruiser. So how did they miss each other?
Unless the parents are in a parallel universe where the kids are not in that cruiser. This is science fiction,
it's
folks.
Confusing.
Anything could happen.
Yeah. I think this is all plausible.
Thank you.
And are they, like, do they just have, like, a small spacecraft for, like, vacation purposes? Where would they go? They say they came from a star cruiser, like, which implies a much bigger space vessel. So were they on the run from another, like, there's also,
on the run,
like, like, the possibility that, like, maybe they're escapees or, like, refugees or something from the Empire, maybe?
I mean, yeah.
If it is pre-Return of the Jedi, then I guess they could be, like, some form of, like, escapees or refugees.
They're just hardcore spice smugglers. That's what we find out.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, well, I have no... There's no way that the Empire would allow them to be prisoners for them, like...
Yeah.
I gotta draw.
So talk about the Sanctuary Pipeline.
So that is one of the strange things about, like, why they're here in the first place, because the whole Sanctuary Moon of Endor, Sulis to Endor is a super secret Imperial hyperspace lane. So the fact that they're here at all is super weird. You're at Endor, you're in the Outer Rim territories. I really want to know why the family's in this place. So maybe that animated one, it explains it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I want this.
I don't trust this family.
I want Bob Caro to make the Ewok adventure his fucking life's work. Like, yeah, I want this to be like his, like, everything he does is about coloring in, like, a different part of the Endor story. To, like,
quick question. Could this family be working for the Empire?
100%.
Definitely.
I think
possible.
That they could be the baddies.
We don't have any indication that they don't work for the Empire, except for the Resistance pilot garb that the kid has.
Yeah, but I think that's a misdirect. Why else are they here?
Well, I think that could be super, like, there's talk about, like, that new Star Wars animated series that's coming out, where it's gonna be, like, a bunch of one-off stories. I always liked in the old canon books where they got into, like, people that were like, ah, oh, the Empire's kind of lame, but also we're stable, like,
I think these are those people.
I think they're cool with the Empire.
Right, right. They're like, you know what? They generally stay out of our hair. We're fine.
Yeah, doesn't bother me. I've got Empire privilege. Like,
yeah.
But it's like Luke at the beginning of New Hope, where he's like, well, it's not that I like the Empire, I hate it, but
you know,
the whole season ahead.
You know, I got my shit to deal with.
Right.
I'm in a desert farming moisture. Oh!
I don't know any better.
I just want to dance.
Oh, Sandy.
Okay, so...
So Sandy.
Just imagine A New Hope with Travolta. It would be so good. Hamill's great, don't get me wrong, but just like, you know, what if? That's what the What If show for Marvel should be doing. Instead of like, what if Doctor Strange lost his heart instead of his hands? It'd be like, what if Danny DeVito played Captain America? It's just the
I'm
whole
so glad you said Captain America, because the second you said Danny DeVito, I said Captain America. It's the obvious casting.
I don't know Marvin Gaye. Like, anyway, back to this.
So
Deej finds the two kids when he's looking for
terrifying.
His own two kids.
And right. It is terrifying.
Which, to be clear, he is finding them by searching on his skin glider. Those are the words they chose. And the person that says skin glider, Burl Ives.
Yes! Burl Ives. Frosty the Snowman Burl Ives.
They must have learned from the holiday special, like, we can't have 45 minutes of nondescript growling language. We need a narrator.
We took a swing. We missed.
We missed.
And so now, Burl Ives is the David Attenborough of the Star Wars universe. It is like a BBC Endor, as he describes what is happening in every scene.
But
every scene. He just pops in every once in a while when they know people are going to get confused.
Yeah, that's the thing.
There's
like,
no consistency.
What it genuinely kind of we're kind of being taken through a terrarium. Like, we're being taken through, like, an exhibit of, like, if they just had not given, like, this fucking, you know, mini Edward Furlong kid and baby Lauren any lines, and it had just been like, Mace is hungry, but Wicket doesn't know what he means, so he's giving him a cricket. Like, they just, like, really laid it out like that the whole time. Super into it. Also not sustainable for 2 hours, but super into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Meerkat Manor again.
Yeah. At a certain point, he just, like, vanishes and then comes back when he's like, oh, shit, there's a shaman.
He made a sandwich.
Luchik comes back, he's like, oh, shit, this is probably going to be confusing if you don't know who the fuck this person is.
Don't be confused.
Guys, there's magic now.
Not the force,
straight up magic.
By his pointy hat. This Ewok's friendly.
the cruiser that they're in that they told the kids to stay in, that they have stayed in, is like exposed wires everywhere. Cannot imagine why these kids don't want to hang out in here. I feel like this is a good time to talk about how these Ewoks are fucking terrifying to look at.
Ooh, yeah.
They are scared. They are definitely, definitely scarier in this than they are in Return of the Jedi.
That's a big thing for me. As someone who, like, yeah, grew up with the old Star Wars, I quibble with some of the changes that get made in each edition that comes out. I'm not a McClunky fan. But the one thing I think they did great was making Ewoks blink in Return of the
great
Jedi.
Great move.
Just
great
really
move.
Good idea.
Yeah.
You gotta make them blink.
Because otherwise, you have these little bears with exposed teeth, knives at the ready.
Like, truly, like, only one of them, Wicket, appears to have lips. Everyone else is just straight up teeth
just
out.
Gums and teeth.
Gums and teeth at all times. Eyes incredible, like wide, like the best way I can describe it.
They're all furry jokers.
They are literally Furbies, and that is the scariest thing that something can be. The eyes are wide.
Yeah, but Furbies can blink.
No, but like not that they
so Furbies are more advanced than Ewoks.
Here's the thing, Ian. Furbies can blink, but they don't. They choose not to, which is, you see, these Ewoks, they sleep, they have eyelids, they can blink, they choose not to, because they don't want to miss a thing.
Hashtag Aerosmith, yeah.
Ewok, don't want to miss a thing.
And also, I had to go back, and I looked up pictures of the Ewoks in Return of the Jedi, because I was like, why were they not scary to me in Return of the Jedi, and suddenly they're terrifying now? And it is that
hindsight is 20/20 or 40/40 when you can't blink.
Well, as Jay pointed out, first of all, you don't get as many close-ups. There's usually more of them, so they sort of blend a little more.
Right, there's a lot of movement going on, so you're looking at all of that. You're not focused
also,
on the face.
Very
there are a few Cecil B. DeMille close-ups in this one.
There's some close-ups on this one, and you're like, ooh, these faces were not built for nuance.
Every Ewok has a face for radio.
Just picture, like, the most aggressive cat you've ever seen, but you smashed it in the face with a frying pan.
They all look like a Build-A-Bear before you put the stuffing in. Or some of them look like a Build-A-Bear that you put too much stuffing in.
That's what I'd say. There's one that they meet later where I'm like, that face is overstuffed. You gotta stop, kid. It's some sadistic kid that's like, keep putting in the fluff. Keep putting it in.
We're not gonna have room for the heart, Johnny.
More.
Good. Good.
More.
It doesn't need a heart. It needs more stuffing. But I also think it's that the lighting is different, because in Return of the Jedi, their eyes just sort of look like chocolatey brown. And then they've got like...
chocolatey brown?
Yeah, they go like...
And this one, it's doo-doo brown?
No, Ian, in this one, it is their straight up yellow eyes. Like a Christmas story. He had yellow eyes.
Yeah, all of these Ewoks are 2 weeks out trying to quit smoking from a 40-year habit. They're on just
also,
coffee.
Their eyes are completely wide open. They are yellow, and their pupils are so small that it's they constantly, they're about to, like, they're in hunter mode. And you're just like, oh, fuck, this dude's about to fucking pounce.
We should also remind you, folks, always brandishing a knife.
That's the first move.
And also, their teeth are constantly bared. They also have human teeth, which is scary. Which also, like, I can't explain to you. Also, like, I think there's something deeply unsettling about seeing something that looks like a teddy bear, but has human teeth.
It's not even
it's
like
horrifying.
It's also like, I mean, it's human teeth, yes, but like they're obviously over exaggerated human teeth. They're like,
they're big human teeth.
They're like those hillbilly teeth that you like put in your mouth for Halloween.
As an individual with large teeth, I identify with them and am also horrified in them and myself.
There you go.
I recognize it.
But like, if you, Jay, had no lips and just teeth out constantly.
If it was just this,
yeah,
that's the worst.
Terrifying.
But yeah, so anyway, they scare the shit out of this little girl, reasonably.
And understandably, because they are going to haunt my nightmares for weeks.
And then they, like, put, like, Edward Furlong in, like, a fucking, like, they tackle him to the ground or something? Like, they get him.
Because he pulls a gun on them.
He does pull a gun on them.
Yeah, again, why does this kid have a gun? He definitely works for the Resistance.
Also, how do they
not the Resistance, the Empire, and he's in disguise.
If they have never run into human beings, how do they know what a gun is?
And this is where it confuses me again, because there's this scene where, like, when he shows up and they've captured him, Wicket has the gun, and he doesn't know what to do with it, and he shoots it backwards.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's Wicket doing it, so I just think he's playing dumb again.
Yeah, I don't know. He's a crafty little son of a bitch.
This Kaiser Soze fucking Ewok?
Right? He's playing the long game.
You watch the movie, and it seems like he's kind of bounding everywhere, and that's just his walk that he slowly adjusts into a smooth stride by the end of the movie.
He takes off a mask, and he's Chewbacca.
Oh, God.
I would believe it in a minute. Anyway, they take these two dumb kids back to the Ewok village, and the kids are like, doing what little dumb kids are. Again, this is why they have to have worked for the Empire, because they are not even trying to know what these Ewoks are saying. They're like,
zero empathy.
Yeah, like, I'm speaking English. You speak English too. And the Ewoks are like, fucking yub nub, my guy. And they're like, my sister's hungry. And they're like, we got a mortar and pestle that's filled with like some corn dust. Like, do you want it? So yeah, these Ewoks are trying to feed baby Lauren. She gets sick because they're feeding her Ewok food.
Right, no immune system.
She's also just got like the black lung. She's like, alien atmosphere.
You've been on Endor for 3 hours. Talk to me when you're down there 30 years.
Well, it's also like you never talk about how like all of these environments, like some of them have got to have like slightly different gravity or slightly different atmosphere. It makes sense people would get sick.
Or different oxygen levels.
Yeah.
Like,
Endor is technically a class 1 atmosphere planet, but a light gravity. Well, and moon, I should say.
Oh.
So these kids should be fucking bouncing?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think
they're nice and spry.
I think that's part of why the older brother acts out so much, is he feels stronger there.
Yeah.
Maybe. I was going to say, yeah, it's either that or he doesn't feel as grounded. He's trying to overcompensate.
Right.
Or he works for the Empire and he's undercover, which is why he's in this Resistance getup.
I think that's the answer.
He does call them animals multiple times.
Yeah,
oh my God.
I mean, honestly, Trax, and she's too young to have gotten the full indoctrination, so she's still, like, got a little bit of innocence within her.
Yeah.
And open-mindedness, and her family's like, we're just playing the long game, and then we are straight up going to eradicate this planet.
Anyway, though, Mace is like, yo, in the dead of the night, I'm going to steal you, sister, and we're going
to
leave.
He's literally like, as soon as I get my gun, we're out of here.
And this is like after they've brought her to the special tree that's got the super sap that heals her.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they got her medicine, they gave her a place to stay, they gave you food, like.
She's like, I like these people. These are my people.
And he's like, fuck these homies, let's leave.
I'm out of here.
And there is that weird moment in the night where they're trying to sneak out. He looks at that gun, and then he looks at all of them, and then he looks at the gun. And then he looks at all of them, and I'm like, what is the implication here?
Is the implication that you're going to shoot them all in their sleep? These innocent Ewoks?
Firmly believe. You got to go somewhere. This is
they're
an emotional
asleep.
Journey.
The thing is, it's like, I get it if they're awake and they're looking at you with those eyes, but they're asleep.
Oh, yeah. No, when the eyes are closed.
You're like, okay, they're teddy bears. They open their eyes, and you're like, nightmare.
That is a piece of production news. They did have to build eyelids for all of the Ewok masks because they did not have them.
Oh, that checks out. There's never any night.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, sleeping scenes. That makes sense.
Well, and how do Ewoks sleep? Ass to mouth. That's how they sleep. They sleep with it. Like, Wicket sleeps with his face in another Ewok's ass.
There's a lot of piling in this movie.
Yeah. There's a lot of piling. They keep the same, like, fucking clothes on that they wear all the time. These things can't smell good.
Yeah, I also have a problem.
Ewoks can't smell good.
I also have the same problem with this movie, and we'll get into this and other similarities later, that I do with, The Hobbit in every adaptation. It's just like, no, there's too many members of the ensemble, and they are dressed in exactly the same outfits and are designed exactly the same and have similar names, and I cannot tell them apart visually.
No.
I can't tell any of the Ewoks in this movie apart. Literally none of them. Literally not even Wicket. Even sometimes I was like, is that Wicket? He's the most famous one. And I was just like, I'm sorry. Like, I can't tell these fucking Ewoks apart. Can one of them have a handlebar mustache or something? I'm legit begging.
They all look like.
Can I give a bandana to one of them?
Yeah,
like,
they all look
please.
Like Wii Sports versions of Wicket. Like, every single one of them looks like it's like, this is Wicket, but with the eyes a little further apart. This is Wicket, but with chubbier cheeks. Like, this is Wicket.
This is Wicket, but, like, overstuffed. You know?
No heart.
This is Wicket, but, like, maybe a girl. You know, like, let's put some titties on her.
That's Wicket.
Wicket! Ah!
Yeah, but they're like, okay, we gotta steal away in the night. Maybe I should kill all these Ewoks. Never mind. No, I won't. And they stow away.
No, I'm too young for my first genocide. That's not till I'm 13.
They get chased.
Mazel tov.
By Charles Ragertainment Cheese, this giant fucking anteater, like, yeah, that, with a mouse face.
Yeah.
That is, like, chasing them through the woods.
The stop-motion monster.
If I think back to my old encyclopedias, it's like a boar wolf or a wolf or boar. It's just boar and wolf put together.
Yeah.
Great, George.
Cool, George.
Cool, George.
Watch Death Sticks.
Sleaze Bagano, one of the most subtly named characters. Yeah.
Yo. It's Bagano, asshole.
Second only to my boy, Kit Fisto.
God, he was the most popular kid at summer camp. You know he was.
Kit Fisto, there was one, Star Wars quiz going around that it's like, answer honestly about yourself. It's like, who would be your Jedi master if you were a Jedi? And I was like, honestly, I'm really bad at advocating for myself, so I would definitely end up with Kit Fisto. All the other kids would end up with Obi-Wan and be super cool, and they'd be like, oh, Lauren will be fine anywhere. Let's get rid of Kit Fisto. And I'd be like, God damn it, this sucks.
It's
but
cool.
I would never say anything because I'm too polite.
I'd get, Yaddle.
Man, Yaddle's a whole other canonical question, too.
Oh, man.
Not even going to get into that right now.
Yeah. but then the Ewoks, they come and save the day. They kill the boar wolf boar, and
in a very convoluted way. They take some stabs at it, with their little teddy bear arms.
There's a whole Jason and the Argonauts style scene where there's the claymation monster and then the Ewok costumes in front stabbing spears at it. But then
they have this dart gun, and one dart straight up kills this monster.
Yeah, well, these are murderous teddy bears.
I'm just saying, but wouldn't that be your first move? If you have a dart that can, what appears to, melt this creature from within.
Right, it goes down in 2 seconds, and then smoke is billowing out of its mouth.
And
it is
dead. It is
being liquefied.
I wonder if, again, I don't want to give this movie too much credit, but I wonder if that is to say that the Ewoks, because they live here, this is their environment, are they don't want to operate in killing. So they're like, maybe if we could just scare them away with this knife, maybe they can just go away.
No, they're going.
And so the blow dart's a last resort.
No, they are going for the kill.
Okay, fine. Fuck me.
They're 100%. No, I think they're 100% going for the kill.
It's an interesting question, because there's... And the scene itself is super interesting because the kids run away. They hide in a hollowed out tree. The monster tries to get in. It can't. They immediately fall asleep. Then wake up, presumably 8 hours later, to the sound of Ewoks fighting this monster. But they're very chill about it for 3 minutes.
Well, also, the Ewoks, because it's 8 hours, I would buy this if the Ewoks showed up right when they were hiding in the tree. But, the Ewoks show up, 8 hours later. They're obviously outnumbered. This is a much bigger predator from them. So I would think that their way of going about their day is to, I'm going to avoid the bigger predator. I'm not going to take on the bigger predator unless I am trying to protect these children who are in danger. But they don't know that they're in there. They don't know that they're in danger. They just see this predator and they, don't... I don't know. I just don't buy that they'd fight it.
Sure.
Unless they do just genuinely want to kill the shit out of these things. Unless that, they're like, oh shit, if we can eat this monster, we don't have to eat these kids. They can be our friends.
Yeah, but they do find a really valuable piece of information on the boar wolf.
Oh
they
my
find,
God. This shit is wild.
They
to
find
me.
Their dad's life monitor.
Yes, which, Jay, explain what life monitors are.
So this is, and I think it's a great juxtaposition from the 8 hours earlier. Because the kids run away in the night.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, the little sister gets tired, Sindel sits down. And she's like, I just need to rest. And at that point, Mace kind of unloads. He thinks a lot of this is his fault. He wants to find his parents.
Mm-hmm.
He has a little bit of a monologue, just really getting down on
himself.
Definitely
a monologue.
Oh my God, this kid was trying so hard to get into the Stella Adler school.
And the first thing Sindel said is, yeah, maybe then they wouldn't be dead.
And
that
I'm like,
is the
oh
first
my
thing
God.
She says after
she's
he
like,
unloads.
She's straight up like, yeah, no, maybe if you weren't such a shitty son, our
if
parents
you
would be alive.
Such a dud.
You were such a dud of a kid. Because he says, I just wanted to be the best kid ever.
Yeah.
The best kid there ever was.
You know when you have really specific motivation as a character?
I just want to be the best kid there ever was.
So there is a weird turn then when after this monster is killed, they're searching it and they find the life monitor. And these are wristbands that the family wears.
It's basically an Apple Watch, right?
Yeah, it's an Apple Watch that are linked to the rest of the families, and you can read their vitals. It's like if you had access to everybody else's Fitbit. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, mom's going on a jog, great. However, here's the weird thing, is they find it, and the Sindel's reaction is, that means dad's alive, which, let's break this down. One, he's not wearing a life monitor. So you have no idea what his vitals are,
I'm assuming what happened is that from the night before, she assumed their dad was dead because there were no vitals coming through, which now I understand, which I wouldn't have known unless you had told me what a life monitor does. So it's like, oh, no vitals are coming through, he's dead. But now they're like, oh, it's not on him, that's why it's not reading vitals. That's the logic. However, it's not on him, and it is attached to this monster. So that's not a good sign.
It's like if you were watching Jaws, and when that head falls out of the boat, you were like, oh, I should see if that guy's home. I have his mail. I've been collecting it the last 2 weeks.
It's like, geez, I hope he's okay.
Like, at the very least, I would assume your dad doesn't have an arm anymore. Like,
yeah, but they're like, oh, dad must be alive. Hey, Ewoks, I know we've been incredibly rude to you pretty consistently.
Despite the fact that you've had incredible hospitality, I get it. Your faces are really scary.
And I know how, like, you wanted us to live here forever and whatever and indoctrinate us into your May Queen ceremony.
Wicket did give her some flowers.
Yeah, Wicket gave you flowers, you know, and Ewoks, he's like, oh shit, she took them, that means she's my child bride.
I know you were looking forward to teaching us how to never blink again.
Yeah, lessons start tomorrow.
It is incredibly rude in your culture to blink.
But, and I know we ran away in the middle of the night without saying goodbye, but could you help us find our fucking parents, please? And the Ewoks are like, oh yeah, they do like a little...
No inconvenience whatsoever.
And you pretty much find out they're like, oh, your parents are being kept in a place that no Ewok has ever returned from.
Right.
So yeah, we'll send like 10 of our biggest and strongest with you to save your parents, who we've never met. We don't know if they're chill.
And again, who are probably fascists.
Yeah. And thus, the village elder,
Logre
sends off the Fellowship of the Ewoks, the Caravan of Courage.
Yeah, and gives them each an item, like D&D style, like, here's your special item for your quest.
It's like an old fable. It's like some Baba Yaga stuff.
Yeah. But two of them, so some of them get useful stuff. Wicket gets a magical walking stick. The Sindel gets this candle that can kind of, like, we find out later, it attracts all of these little light creatures.
Well, and also it never goes out.
Never goes out. And then our boy Mace, you know, the asshole, he gets a rock and he's like, what am I going to do with this rock? Fuck you! and they're like, dude, just fucking be chill.
Just take the fucking rock, my guy.
Take the rock, dude. Right. Maybe you got a rock because you're an asshole. Like, just think about that, maybe.
Somehow you conned this family into helping you. This Ewok group. Like, there's like a whole, like, touching scene where, like, it's only the mom and dad Ewok awake at night. And she's, like, saying goodnight to all of her kids who are asleep. And the dad's like, no, come here. We're going to be okay, I swear.
Yeah.
And he's just like, nah, forget your rituals.
Also, like, Wicket got a stick, bro. Like, go with it.
Two of them get headbands made of feathers that do jack shit in the scene.
Just there for style. Like, one of you gets a stick, one of you gets a rock, another one gets a candle.
Wicket,
she got
is
a
the
fucking
only...
Bed Bath and Beyond.
This is the only one that does anything.
Wicket's the only Ewok that gets an item that is helpful.
Well, no, because then they're like, there are two left over. There's a tooth. And there's, like, a crystal.
Oh, yeah.
And Mace is like, I want one of those! They're like, no.
Because they're also like, you need to get two more members of your party.
You need to pick up Rolf and Fozzie on the way down to the big show.
Moving right along.
they're like, okay. So first stop, they're like, you think
this
is
a team together.
Yeah, and you think it's like, cool, we're gonna put a team together. It's gonna be a while. They get like 3 seconds out of town, and they see this big fucking hunk of an Ewok.
Yes.
The overstuffed Ewok.
The overstuffed Ewok. Yeah, they literally, cheesy crust Ewok.
Literally, they conscript the first two Ewoks they come across once they leave.
And it did hit me
They're not picky at all.
The first, yeah, the one with the axe that's cutting down the tree, I was just like, oh, this makes so much sense. Like, George Lucas, people talk about him borrowing from Kurosawa from the Hidden Palace for R2-D2 and C-3PO, the idea of Jedi, all that stuff. And you've got another great movie, The Magnificent Seven, which borrows from The Seven Samurai. And in The Magnificent Seven, you've got Charles Bronson, who is found alone by a house cutting some wood. And throughout the course of that movie has like an affinity for these kids in the village that are having a rough time. And we come across this one lone Ewok felling a tree who ends up tweaking this annoying mace kid's nose. And throughout the course of the movie ends up being like his savior.
Yeah.
He is the Charles Bronson of Ewoks.
It's a
real late addition to the ensemble.
Because it's like 50 minutes in at this point.
Oh, they don't start the caravan. It's much like Fellowship of the Ring. The caravan does not assemble until like 50 minutes into this hour and a half movie. So yeah, they get this dude because like...
it's too late. Like, I'm sorry, dude.
Well, first of all, the
good
kid,
idea. Too late. You should have gotten him earlier.
Yeah, Mace is like... Like, you think you're good with an axe? Check this out! And he, like, fucking takes a stick that's got a CD-ROM tied to it, and he chucks it into a fucking tree. And he's like, see? I can do that.
I hit a redwood.
Yeah. This is Marin County.
The biggest tree.
This is all filmed in George Lucas's backyard. And then Hunky Bear takes another axe, and it's just like, you think that's cool? And he goes and hits it right in the ass of the hatchet that that Mace threw. And he's like, oh, fuck you, kid. Like, and they're like, all right, I guess
you
can
like,
stay.
And he's also like, no, I'm not doing it. And then like Mace is like, what are you, a fucking coward? And I'm like, he doesn't speak English. Like, he doesn't know what that means. Like,
but it's also like Mace was just being like, we don't need you. And then after like a quick turnabout, we need you, you coward.
Yeah. And they're like, here, we have a tooth for your tooth necklace. You want to come with us? And he's like, seems like a fair trade.
He's like, finally, the collection is complete.
He's like, yeah, I'll give my life for this. Yeah, sure, seems legit.
I'm in.
Well, it's an ivory tooth, too, so that dude's going to trade it on the black market.
Big deal. And then they meet another person who is the most inconsequential character of this entire movie.
He's a wizard.
She's
a wizard. Excuse me.
We find Galadriel.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's a wizard.
She takes the crystal and attaches it to a staff, and now she has magic.
And, like, also magic that is different from the Force. So this is also, like, making canon the fact that magic exists in this world. Because, like, Jedi cannot transfigure objects. Like, this is taking a crystal and turning it into a lizard and then
a mouse.
Which, like, the Force can't do that. This is a completely different realm of magic.
Right. You could convince someone they were holding those things. It could be an illusion, but this...
This was actual, like, this is, like, alchemy.
Straight up transmutation.
Yeah, so, like, that shit's wild.
Implications.
She's powerful as fuck.
Used it again.
And the only thing she does is hypnotize a spider later. Like,
not even hypnotize. She pretty much gets the spider to just... She pauses the spider.
She hits the pause button. She's like, pulls up and does like a level 10 spell and then goes back to being a level 1 character. Like, it's wild. She's like, oh, cool, I could do transfiguration, but then later, all I can do is a simple stun. Like, which, like, if you play a wizard in any D&D, is a level 0 spell.
Yeah. The next 30 minutes of this movie don't matter.
Ian, the 10 minutes we just talked about also don't matter.
Well, no, but those are establishing new characters. Legit,
new characters don't matter.
The adventures that were...
Those new characters literally don't matter. What are you talking about?
The adventures...
They're just bonus characters. They're more toys. Like, what are you talking about?
That matters to George Lucas.
They don't matter. They don't do anything.
People are like clamoring. They're trying to beat up Jeffrey the giraffe at Toys R Us to get the next Chica Talk or whatever the fuck.
I'd like to point out these Ewoks look exactly the same as the other Ewoks. Like, I cannot tell them apart. They're in a crowd at the end, and I'm like, no fucking clue which one you are.
One of them's got on, like, a clan hood, and it's, like, a little rough. It's a rough look.
One of them dies, and I'm like, which one is this?
It's like, I can tell why Mace likes it. It's like, oh, you look like my friends at the rallies.
Yeah, but one of them dies, and I did not know which one of them died until all of a sudden he pulled his axe up into frame to remind you. Oh, yeah, he's the one with the axe. Oh,
Chunky Bear.
Charles Bronson.
Charles Bronson, CB, Chunky Bear. But yeah, there is some, like, shenaniganry on the road.
They each have to use their magical object.
In very short order.
Yeah. Although there is, like, a really genuinely kind of creepy moment of magic where this stream where Mace looks at his reflection in the stream and then gets trapped under the water.
That was one of the things that came back to me. Like, just as he approached the pond, I was like, oh, right. Because I think it's legitimately been 2 decades since I watched this movie.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And but that is one of the things that stuck with me.
Yeah, it's like a really creepy idea of, like, oh, you see your reflection in the pond, but if you touch the pond, you turn into your reflection and are therefore, like, drowning under the water, and you can't get above the surface of the water.
Again,
which is really, like, pretty creepy.
Again, it's kind of like the lake in Return of the King. Right. Where, like, mm-hmm. the creatures pull down Frodo.
Yeah. There's a lot of Lord of the Rings parallels in this.
Yeah.
And specifically The Hobbit. I think it feels very, very akin to The Hobbit, where it's just like, we're putting together a group of people, we're going on this quest, it's very episodic. You know, there's
a lot of it doesn't matter.
A lot of it doesn't matter.
We're padding a lot of the runtime.
Luke
Evans is here. Like,
had some great matte paintings, which in the Lord of the Rings would have been like awesome helicopter shots of mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the matte, actually, so the matte paintings that were used in this were a lot of the same matte paintings that were used in the first set of scenes in the Neanderthal age of 2001 A Space Odyssey. They, like, reused a lot of those for the first time since filming that movie.
Oh, that's cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Now we get to the cave.
There's also the Tinkerbell character that becomes a thing.
I do think she's a cool effect.
Yeah.
Oh, let's talk about
maybe the coolest looking.
What's
thing
her name?
Movie.
Evangeline?
No, that's Princess and the Frog.
That's when that racist mosquito says Princess sings.
I know that she is a Wistie. That is the name of her type of creature. It's like a little Tinkerbell lightning bug person.
Yeah, but it's like they achieve the effect through, like, stop motion photo almost. Like,
it's really interesting. It's something that I would like to, you know, get, like, an effects artist's take on. Because it, you know, like, a lot of effects you'll do, like, you have to time, like, rotoscope, matte painting. And then, you know, because it's Lucasfilm, they have all, like all the stuff where they composite, like, the Gorax, the giant creature versus the individuals. Like, you know, you can see, you know, there's, like, that little bit of a black line. If you think about Return of the Jedi, when the Rancor reaches down to grab Luke, you can kind of see the black line around the Rancor's hand. It's a hard thing to get rid of. But, like, they had that technology at Lucasfilm, obviously. And so there's that stuff going on. She's really unique. I would assume that it's like a bit of a rotoscope element where it's someone kind of, you know, drawing on the film on an extra sheet so you can track it.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it just has to come down to the design. Like, you know what, we're going to have her zip around. It's kind of like the way you see a hummingbird, right? Mm. They just seem to go from place to place to place because they move so quick. And they do the same thing with her. So it's a lot of silhouettes that quickly change. And it's one of those things where you had, like, probably a pretty talented conceptual artist that was like, all right, if we're going to pull this off in a conceivable way, this is the technology we have, this is a way to do it to make it look believable, I'm going to put all those elements together, and this is what that equation equals. And I think they executed it very well.
I think it's the best design in the movie.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, especially when we get the shot of, like, Mace holding the one named Wistie that we get. Yeah.
Isrina. Looked it up on Wikipedia.
But yeah, when he's, like, holding Isrina in his hand, and you really kind of get, like, just that shot of it moving around on his hand.
Yeah.
It looks really cool, and the effect looks really good.
Yeah, I think it's the coolest, it's, like, the coolest looking effect, because I actually think, like, if I saw that effect today, I'd be like, oh, that's a really cool, like, practical, semi-practical.
Yeah. And now you understand why the spiders are so horrible.
Oh my god.
Oh.
All that time went to her.
Yeah, they're in the cave.
The Cave
and,
of Wonders.
Yeah, yeah, and they have to climb across a cavern. Using basically.
Should we get into how they get into the cave first, then?
Oh yeah. Okay.
Hold on, Jay, talk us through this.
I think you should start this one, Lauren, because you were the one that really jumped on it.
It broke my brain. Well, first of all, he broke his rock open, and there's a arrowhead in there, and it really just seems like they maybe should have just given him an arrowhead.
No, it's like kinda, you don't just give somebody two AirPods. You got to put them in the case.
It felt like a, you know,
it's
got to
charge up the arrowheads.
It felt like an unnecessary step. And the arrowhead then like spins around and then shoots off and basically shows them the way to the cave that is the way to their parents. And
how did it know where to point?
I don't know. Magic.
Was this like one of those like I'll point you to your innermost desires?
I think it's a Pirates of the Caribbean situation.
It seemed like the idea of the thing that was important being hidden in the rock, and then having to break it open to find the thing you needed to show you where you needed to go, would have been a great plot point to develop over time.
Mm-hmm.
Him initially not being hyped on it, but then coming to terms with it, being like, wait a minute, I should respect these people and learn from them. And then there would be like a lesson, and that would lead him to it.
And things aren't always as they seem.
Right.
To meet things on their level and like examine everything, even if it looks ordinary.
Or you just have Wicket pick it up and give it to him when he needs it, and he smashes it.
Yeah. Exactly. Wicket's like, you fucking idiot.
Yahtzee.
Here you go. Fucking idiot. But it points right to a rock that's at the mouth of this cave. And they can't get through it. And all of a sudden he's like, give me my blaster, I'll shoot it. And I was like, oh, this dumb fucking kid. Everyone's gonna laugh at this fucking child.
Massive boulder.
Being like, oh, I'm gonna shoot this boulder out of the way.
I didn't shoot a rock with my gun.
I was like, this is gonna be embarrassing. But then he takes his blaster and then uses a setting on the blaster that I didn't know existed, where I guess if you hold it down, it doesn't just do like the single shot of it, but I guess if you hold the trigger down, it just does a steady like laser stream.
Like a proton pack from Ghostbusters.
A laser stream at it, and then legitimately disintegrates the boulder. Which I did not know that blasters were capable of in this universe.
And suddenly, now it's making more sense to me that, yeah, maybe the family, maybe the parents were Imperial scientists, and this was a prototype.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the kid was a fucking runner. He was a runner to, like, try and infiltrate into these resistance fighters. We should not be rooting for these people.
No.
And I'm just like, at this point, I'm just like, I feel like that setting would have been very helpful in many scenarios throughout the Star Wars universe. And it kind of just seems like that scene, like pretty much so many scenes where they're trapped behind stuff, that it's just like, oh, when they needed to get out of that trash compactor, they could have just blasted a hole in the fucking wall. They could have just disintegrated the entire fucking ship if they wanted to. Apparently, you can just shoot a blaster at the Death Star and just call it a fucking day, I guess.
Right, just let's put a bunch of holes in it. Done. Swiss
wild,
cheese, people in space.
Wild shit.
Yep.
So yeah, anyway, they end up in this fucking cave, and there's a spider that has,
well, they find a ropes course that they need to travel across.
Yeah, they also leave, what is the sister's name? Baby Lauren.
Sindel.
They leave Baby Lauren behind, because they're like, you're a child, you should be left at this point of the journey, and we should go ahead.
And she's
these,
like,
and these
cool.
Two, and these two Ewoks should stay behind and babysit you. At which point, I screamed and went, then why the fuck did she just stay in the fucking village? She hasn't contributed like anything. If it's too dangerous for her to go beyond this point, it's too dangerous for her to have come. There's also a point when, like, I think like the horses run off while she's in, like, on the horse, and then like then it ends so abruptly that it's not even worth mentioning.
The one contribution she had was when her brother was stuck underwater. She says, "Wicket, your magic stick."
And Wicket's like,
oh shit, yeah.
Kush, yeah. Like, oh, yum nub. Yeah, no, I got you.
That's Tiati.
That's Tiati.
Oh, good.
So anyway, they end up going over this ropes course that extends from one like one length of a chasm to another. It's made up of a spider web. So of course,
and the set from The Last Crusade's Bridge of Faith.
Great point.
I guarantee you that's the same map.
Jay
thing
makes
there.
A great
yeah,
point.
It looks exactly the same.
And so they start climbing across. And of course, a spider comes down and is like, "Hey, bitch, that's my home."
Actually, what's pretty amazing about it, sorry to interrupt you, is it's actually not a spider. It's a puppet of a spider that another puppet of a spider is using to try and distract these dumb humans.
Oh my god, that would be so funny if it just panned up to a larger spider, like straight
up. You can't
like,
see this podcast audience, but we're all doing marionette hands.
It's marionette hands. I love The Sound of Music. High on a hill was a lonely spider. Yodelay, 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 yub nub.
Touche.
You can see shit ton of wires on these spiders.
It's a bad look.
Egregious.
Unfortunate. Because like up close, like the puppetry on the face of the spider isn't bad.
They got wet teeth, you know, like right. Spiders have.
They did, you know, enough due diligence to make it look kind of gross and weird. Not
to
the most
be fair,
ambulatory.
It is like an effort that the rest of the movie doesn't always make. To make something look like an alien version of an animal, rather than just like the llama that's in earlier in this movie.
The ferret they hang out with repeatedly.
The ferret that's in the movie. The chickens. Like,
the lizard. Like the like these,
right.
The mouse.
These creatures from planet Earth that somehow made their way to the moons of Endor.
The Petco that was next door to the studio.
The Chipotle they ate at every day.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's a bad. These spiders are rough looking.
But luckily, our little clansman Ewok ends up using their
stun
their
spell.
Power, yeah, to pause the spiders so everybody can get across the bridge. And
yeah, and then
then they're just kind of like, cool, spider, be gone.
they got Charles Bronson, Chippy Bear, Chunky Bear cut down the web. Everything
he
falls
only
down.
Cut one, and the whole thing fell down. In which case, I'm like, Sir, Mr. Spider. That is not structurally, like, sound, even a little bit. And you need to start again and make your foundation strong. Because one cut should not be able to take your whole house
down.
And
that spider falls down a chasm and is like, thank you for your notes. But then the spider shows up
in Star Wars. Everyone survives chasm falling.
Yeah, the spider shows up again to fight, like, Sindel and, like, a couple other bears. And one of them, like, just stabs
Wicked.
It in the heart.
Like,
yeah, Wicked.
We've seen him brandish his knife 1,000 times throughout this movie. Like, that is his handshake, is pulling out his knife. But in this moment, we see why. He goes to town. He really shanks that spider. Mm-hmm.
100%, yeah.
Maybe this
from the nape to the chaps, this one.
Maybe this is pre-Return of the Jedi, and this is an explanation for why he feels the need to always have his knife at the ready.
So canonically, I will say, on Wikipedia, it says that this takes place between Empire and Jedi. So this would take place before the events of Return of the Jedi. Ooh. Although, and again, that's what makes the most sense to me, again, because these are, as we've said before, these are an Imperial family.
Yeah.
And also, like, yo, I would play dumb to, like, Carrie Fisher teach me things, too. Like, I get it. Like,
word.
Yeah, it'd be fucking rad.
Yeah. These are, like, the people that they meet next, like, in Return of the Jedi are also, like, significantly hotter. So, like, I feel like it's like, oh, let's give it a shot.
Hey, I'll play dumb to hang out with Carrie Fisher and get a granola bar.
I'm just a dumb little baby bear.
Look how cute I am with my knife. Yeah. I'm cute, but I have a knife. Isn't that interesting? Don't
but
you want to know
real,
more about me?
Yeah.
After this, I will win the war for you. My people will set up a guerrilla resistance that takes down this regime.
We are that hardcore.
We do not fuck around.
I will make instruments out of the adornments of your enemy's protection.
So dark.
Fuck yeah.
So dark. But yeah, so then they get into the Gorax's cave. As we said, the Gorax just looks like a giant Mark Rylance.
talking about Return of the Jedi, quick sidebar. I do like that the Gorax, it's sort of like the, the Death Star has a weakness retconned in from Rogue One because, like, oh, I was setting it up that way. The Gorax, that's the whole reason they've got the giant logs already set up to bust the AT-ST heads. They're anti-Gorax traps. Just thought y'all should
Ooh.
That is good. That's a really good detail.
That makes
that's
sense.
That's the reason for this movie. That's the same reason that, like, that was the entire reason of Rogue One. This is the entire reason for an Ewok adventure.
And I love that this movie keeps balance, because you have moments like that where you're like, wow, they're so resourceful. And they
something
really,
needed to bring balance to the Force.
They really thought ahead, and they are creating traps that have, like, great complexity. But then you also have scenes like this scene with the Gorax, where they go to rescue people from a cage and end up getting more people in the cage rather than letting them out.
Well,
just everyone climbs up and gets in the cage rather than just getting people down out of the cage.
As we accurately, I think, pointed out then, where it's like the Gorax has been, like, they've been separated from their parents for at least a few days.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Let's say conservatively, like, 4 days.
Bare minimum.
Yeah.
Bare minimum. And the Gorax hasn't eaten or killed them yet.
Mm-hmm.
So it stands to reason they probably weren't going to eat or kill them.
Human zoo. Yep. Human zoo.
Which we deserve. But.
That's fair.
But yeah, so I'm just kind of like, I don't know. Maybe the Gorax isn't as big of a threat as we think.
Maybe he's just lonely.
Yeah.
He just kind of wants to hang. He wants a pet.
Long story short, they use these fireflies, the Wispies. Yes?
One Wispy. Because the rest of the Wispies joined the flame of the candle.
Yeah.
They committed mass suicide by throwing themselves into this candle, I guess.
I'm not 100% sure if it's like that or if she is like the Voltron of Wispies.
I think it says on Wikipedia that she's the queen.
Of
the Wispies.
Good for Mace hooking up with the queen.
I know. He's basically like, this is my girlfriend now.
And like, quick sidebar. It's like, during this scene where they let her loose, she gets a name.
Yeah.
And like, maybe I blinked or something. When did that ever come up?
She had never had a name before this. He's like, go, Irina, go! And we're like, who the fuck is she? Is this a new character at minute 80?
Excuse me, Ian. It's Irina.
Irina.
But yeah, they unleash her to basically be a distraction while they get the parents out. Also, you learn that the cage has multiple openings that are larger than the size of a human body. They could have gotten out at any point.
These fucking idiot
just wait
parents.
Till, just like legit wait until he falls asleep and then just like peace out. What are you doing?
It is not that far a drop.
Yeah, it's really dumb.
But this thing freaks out. He knocks over a stalagmite, crushes him in the head.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Oh, Charles. Yeah, Charles Bronson dies.
As the Axeman.
I'm the Axeman!
Or as I just thought of him.
Sorry. Jump.
I just thought of him as, and my axe. That's what I called him the entire time. I mean, one of them does have an axe and one of them does have a bow. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Weird.
But it's, yeah, he dies!
Yeah.
Straight up dies, and we're supposed to care.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you introduced this character way too late. You need to bring me in earlier.
The biggest thing for me was that he closed his eyes, and I was like, oh.
Oh, shit, he really is dead. Well, also, there is a moment where he's like, take my axe, and the kid's like, no, you're not gonna die. He closes his eyes, and the kid's like, aw, shit, well, here's your axe.
Yeah, it's like he dies, and he just goes, thanks. He like runs away.
For all we know, 20 minutes after the resolution, this Ewok gets up and is just like, oh,
did you check to make sure I was dead?
Yeah.
Man.
This kid does not understand alien physiology. I was fine. I was just needed to take like a little hibernation nap. I'm good.
They never passed no Ewok left behind on Endor. It was very...
But yeah, they defeat this monster. They put, like, he gets thrown off down the chasm. And of course, because it's Star Wars, he climbs up out of the chasm, attacks them again, and they yeet him back on down together. They don't think of using that dart that melts things from the inside, which I feel like should have been something they brought along.
Right. Just bring a case of those.
Just like
100%.
Maybe just bring a little case along, just like the little poison bullets that melt people. Just a thought. But yeah, that's basically the end. They find their parents. They go back, and they have like a great little like dinner. And the dad of the group is like, we both got really good kids. And I'm like, shut up, Nazi.
And the main father Ewok is like, I can't understand a fucking word this guy's saying.
I do not understand.
Kush?
Tiati?
Do I smoke this sweet Kush with me, my guy?
I will fatten you up for 2 more months.
Oh yeah, we made you a hut. It's made out of these bars. Just walk right in.
Tiati.
But that's the end of the movie.
That's
the end of the Ewok Adventure Caravan.
It is a freeze frame to credits right there.
Yeah, they're like, oh shit, we gotta get out of here.
It is exactly an hour and a half long.
I will say this. This movie, believe it or not, is an award-winning film.
What did it win?
What award?
It won an Emmy Award.
No shit.
For...
Screenwriting.
No, special effects.
Oh, special effects. All right.
No, for 1985, won a special effects award.
For 1985.
I dig that.
And it was not, but it was also nominated for best children's programming, and it did not win. Unfortunately.
Can't imagine it would.
What was it up against?
I have no clue. So yeah, this movie was entirely filmed in California, in Marin County, literally like in the fucking backyard of Skywalker Ranch.
Tracks.
And yeah, apparently George Lucas was incredibly proud of this movie. Very, very proud of it. And pitched really hard for it to get a theatrical release. Like, tried to break the contract with ABC to release it theatrically because he was so proud of it.
There's no need for that.
Nope. It was released theatrically in several European countries and Japan.
Wow.
How are they supposed to make their sandwiches?
They're like, oh, we have to go see the Ewoks, yeah.
Do not worry, there will be a sandwich bar down underneath the screen.
I'm a hero, man! but yeah, that's this movie.
What?
It was obviously because it's a TV film, there's no box office, no, but you know, whatever. There's none of that information.
Right.
So I guess we'll just cut to now final thoughts. Would you recommend an Ewok Adventure Caravan of Courage in 2021? Jay, this is your choice. You brought it to us. I'm going to go to you first.
So, you know, it's one of those things that, as a kid, I probably couldn't have articulated it, but when I look back, I watch the original trilogy every single week of my childhood. And then I found this VHS a few months ago, covered in dust, in that corner of the cabinet, and the reason for that is that, it, you know, I haven't missed it for 2 decades. If you're a Star Wars fan or a completionist, go ahead and watch it. Otherwise, if you're just considering it as a film to enjoy, you know, have a sandwich and booze party while it's on. That's the best I can say.
Yeah.
Get a charcuterie board, leave it in the other room so you can get some exercise.
Work those sausages off.
Yeah.
Lauren, what about you?
I can't say I recommend this film. I can't. I gotta be honest. I can't recommend this film. I will say that if you ever find yourself in a place as a Star Wars fan where you're like, oh, you know what? Maybe I do need to give that Star Wars holiday special a chance. Don't do that. But if you haven't seen this, turn this on instead. I think this will fill the, like, oh, like, semi-shitty Star Wars thing that I can put on the background or, like, make fun of with my friends. This one is a much better choice than the Star Wars holiday special. I can't emphasize enough to you how much better of a choice this is.
Yeah.
Because this is dumb. It's very dumb, and sometimes it's boring, but it's mostly, like, we watched it the whole time. We talked through the whole thing. We were making jokes. We were laughing consistently. We had a great time. But as a film, absolutely not. This is not a good film. Ian.
Yeah, I kind of feel like if you're over the age of 10 and you're turning this on by yourself, you may be a psycho.
Yeah, you can't turn this on by
yourself.
You may be
the Zodiac Killer. If you're watching an Ewok Adventure by yourself at 10 years old, you may be
Zodiac Killer.
That being said, I think this is better than, like, 3 Star Wars movies.
What's your ranking now? Where would this go in your overall Star Wars movie ranking?
This would go, I think it's better than Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones.
I would say that, too!
I think it goes Phantom Menace is the worst, Attack of the Clones second worst. Then, actually, no, let me take that back. I'd go the Clone Wars movie as the worst.
Oh, yeah.
I hated that movie.
Clone Wars.
Sorry, Eric. I hated that movie. Then I go Clone Wars, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, this, then Solo, Rise of Skywalker, and then we're into the like and the third one, Revenge of the Sith. Mm-hmm. Then we're into the pretty good ones and onto the great ones.
I would have basically the same as you, but I would probably put this below Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, probably.
I would say above Phantom Menace, below Attack of the Clones.
There's not as much needless racism in this movie as there is in The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
I don't feel like this one's setting out to do any damage.
Except for the fact that
it's shorter.
And its lead is fascist.
And there's a lot of pretty fun visual effects in this that I really appreciated. I like the Jason and the Argonauts style, like the claymation and the puppetry I find to be really charming. Mm. But yeah, so it's not a recommend, but it's also not like a fuck this movie, like I hated it. It's like a, you know
what you're getting into.
Know what you're getting into. I think if you're a Star Wars fan, then I would 100% recommend this. Like, just be like, genuinely watch it. I think you'd have a good time with it because, as I've said several times to several people, no franchise, no anything is above criticism and satire. Mm-hmm. So everything should be able to be made fun of. And I think that with things like this, you get that example. Mm-hmm. Great. Like we always do at this time, is there a modern analog to Caravan of Courage?
Mm. Who's going first?
Jay, do you have one off the top of your head? I got one off the top of my head, so I can go first if we need to. Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Lauren, go.
I want to recommend a movie that I can't remember if I've recommended this before. But
You've
I do
recommended
think
it, Paddington and Paddington 2.
And I'm not going to recommend them, as I promised that I would not. Even though you should watch them, Paddington 1 and Paddington 2, you should watch them. I would like to recommend a movie called The Martian, which is, like, you know, most people know The Martian. It's a great film, and I thought of it as a recommendation because it is also a film that is about, like, survival on an alien planet, that is also a story of, like, cooperative team effort and friendship and believing in, like, that the innate nature of any species, and specifically the human race, is to help each other and to, like, make sure that everyone has a chance. And I also want to recommend The Martian is based on a book by Andy Weir, by the same name, who also came out with a book recently called Project Hail Mary that I don't want to say too much about because I think that you should go into that book knowing as little as possible. But very similarly to The Martian is about the cooperative nature of survival in space, and is like very much a sci-fi story that is filled with hope about the connections that we make, and the fact that science is the beauty of science fiction and of science in general is about sharing knowledge and solving problems together. And I just loved it so, so much. It's like a book that I can't stop thinking about. That's Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir. But some really good sci-fi out there for some pretty mediocre sci-fi.
There you go. Taking shit, turning it into potatoes.
Yeah.
Jay, what do you got?
I had two thoughts. As far as like a modern analog for people that are on a journey in nature, they're setting out to do a thing, and they discover things during the journey along the way. A fantastic movie, I think from 2016, is The Hunt for the Wilder People.
Ooh,
great choice.
Yeah.
Love that movie.
It's fantastic. It's directed by Taiki Waititi, and it's got Sam Neill and the younger actor. I can't think of his name right now, but he is...
he's in Deadpool 2 as well.
He's in Deadpool 2. He was in the Godzilla, most recent one of those. It's just a fantastic, lighthearted journey that also has got some good heartstring pulls. It's shot very well. It's got great comedy, some fun action. It's what you want in a good journey through the wild kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I will say, it's not a modern analog, but a movie from this era that also is people on a journey, a quest, a band of people. The movie Willow, which...
Mm. Warwick Davis, yeah.
I would highly recommend that as well.
Yeah, great movie.
Yeah.
We gotta do that on the pod soon. I'd love to do Willow. I loved that movie when I was a kid.
It's been a long time. I would love to go through that one.
I've never seen it.
It's really good. I think you'd dig it. It's very charming and very fun.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah, I had mine within like 5 minutes of this movie starting. I was just like, I know exactly what I'm going to recommend. I'm really excited to recommend it because I don't think I've recommended it before. I think this came out in 2014. It is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I ride super hard for these new Planet of the Apes movies. I think that they're so much better than they have any right to be. The second one in particular is the best one, in my opinion. And a lot of the reason is because that movie starts with about 30 minutes of just living in the woods with the apes. Mm-hmm. There are no humans in like the first 30 minutes of the movie, so you're just watching these apes doing sign language and communicating with each other and watching how they have established a life and what their mode of living is, and it's fucking fascinating. And so when a human shows up for the first time, it really... It's a shock to your system when that happens. And the way the rest of the movie unfolds is excellent. The one after that is also really good, War of the Planet of the Apes. But that one is... I don't want to ever watch that movie again if I don't have to, because that shit was like Schindler's List for apes. But it's like a movie about the Holocaust, but it's with apes. It's nuts. I never want to watch it again. But it was very, very well done. but yeah, that's it. Go watch Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. It's not nearly as traumatic, and it's some really great action scenes. Andy Serkis and Tony Campbell are great. Lauren.
Yes.
Talk to us really quick about The Vanishing Act. What's going on? Jay's in The Vanishing Act.
Excellent. All three of us are in The Vanishing Act. Yeah, The Vanishing Act is our scripted show. It's a like fully narrative show. All 12 episodes of the first season are out right now. You can go binge all of them right now. It's like set in the 19th. It has nothing to do with the movie that we just watched. Set in the 1930s. It's a farce. It's a satire. It's very, very silly. Jay is in our second season as well. We're very, very excited for what's coming up. We got a lot of wild shit coming up in this next season.
And then Jay, do you wanna plug anything? Any particular tours or anything that you do?
Well, speaking of tours,
not trying to pimp you out, but
well, I will always take that, Daddy. I would say we are up and running again after our COVID hiatus. We're still asking people to wear masks, but check out Untouchable Tours, Chicago's original gangster tour. We'll take you back to the 1920s and 30s Prohibition-era Chicago, looking at the North Side, West Side, South Side, the old hideouts, shootouts, and the life and times of Al Capone, Elliot Ness, John Dillinger. About an hour and 45 minutes. If you want more information, you can find us at gangstertour.com. Shoot us an email at untouchabletours@gmail.com. We run shows currently 11 o'clock and 1 o'clock every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We'd love to show you a swell time here in the Windy City.
Yeah, we will link all of that information in our show notes as well.
Yes, check that out.
Yep. Thank you very much for listening, folks. As always, please be safe. Please get vaccinated if you have not already gotten vaccinated. And watch some more of these silly goddamn Ewok movies. Bye.